a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you today. A very eventful weekend down in Atlanta, Georgia for the 154th annual meetings of the National Rifle Association. Got to tell you, we uploaded a lot of videos on Friday and over the weekend. We have many, many more conversations to share with you in the days ahead. In fact, today you're going to be hearing from NRA Executive Vice President Doug Hamlin, who had a chance to sit down with me on Saturday afternoon after the NRA members meeting, one of the many activities taking place in Atlanta. It was, I got to say, it was a great weekend. It was fantastic to see a lot of old friends in person, to meet some viewers and listeners of Bearing Arms Cam and Company, some of whom have been around since the days of NRA News. So it was really fantastic to put a face with some names and some voices. It's my first time at the NRA annual meeting since 2022 in Houston, Texas. So it had been a couple of years away for me. And it really was just an extraordinary time. I don't know the final attendance numbers. Those will come out this afternoon. We will also learn the results of the NRA board elections on Monday afternoon. And as you heard, NRA First Vice President Bill Bakkenberg challenging sitting NRA President Bob Barr for the position as NRA President. In fact, you've got a slate of reformers. Mark Vaughn, who is currently, well, as of Monday morning, the second Vice President of the National Rifle Association, running for first VP. And then you've got Rocky Marshall. Took me a second there. Rocky Marshall running for NRA second Vice President on that reform slate. So we'll have more for you on Tuesday's Bearing Arms Cam and Company about the structure of the NRA's officers. But NRA Executive Vice President Doug Hamlin, I think he is going to be sticking around unless something truly extraordinary happens at the NRA annual meetings or the Board of Directors meetings later today. And again, I got to say, it was just a great weekend right up until I packed up my equipment on Saturday afternoon, and then it all went to hell in a handbasket. I got back to the hotel Saturday night. There were not one but two proms, as well as a woman's 90th birthday party being held at the hotel. Now, the 90th birthday party celebration, that didn't get out of hand, but the boom-ka-boom-ka-boom-ka bass of the prom, you could hear it. It was like I was there. It was like I got an invite that I didn't want. And then I tried to move rooms and had a unexpected, at least one big unexpected six-legged visitor greet me there when I opened the door. And I was like, you know what? I'm out. I'm done. So I started my drive home a little bit early. I was going to get up early Sunday morning and drive home. Ended up starting out Friday, Saturday night. Made it to, I think it was Commerce, Georgia. I had my first Whataburger since I left Oklahoma. That was a good start to a Sunday morning. And then it went sideways in South Carolina when I was involved in a car accident. Thankfully, I'm okay. My car, not so much, but I'm okay. I made it home safe and sound eventually, a little bit later than I planned. But yeah, thankfully, I just decided, you know, the last time I drove to an NRA annual meeting, it was 2016. It was Louisville, Kentucky. And I hit a deer when I was about 200 miles from home. So I've just decided that from now on, as much as I don't like all of the hassle of flying, I guess I'm going to have to get my real ID, because I don't think it's a good idea for me to drive to the NRA annual meetings. But I made it back okay. The computer made it back okay with the hard drive intact. So we have plenty, again, of interviews to share with you over the course of probably not just this week, but next week as well. And again, let's get things started with our sit down with NRA Executive Vice President Doug Hamlin. Take a look and a listen. Well, you know, we are here in Atlanta, Georgia for the NRA annual meetings. This is day two as I'm sitting down recording interviews. Had a chance to talk to a lot of great folks here, and right now I'm thrilled to have with us the Executive Vice President of the National Rifle Association, Doug Hamlin, is with us on the program. Doug, thank you so much for spending some time with us, sir.
Glad to be here, Cam.
I'm going to have to ask you to lean in a little bit closer to the microphone so folks can hear you. You are a you've got a big platform, but you're a very soft-spoken guy, and and I really do appreciate not only you sitting down here, but I appreciate everything you're doing for this organization. Seems like this has been a really good weekend. I mean, I'm just speaking objectively here. You know, I know I was in the members meeting earlier. You talked about the NRA Foundation dinner Friday night. Last year, 400 attendees. This year, 900 attendees. I heard a lot of exhibitors yesterday talking about how pleased they were for Friday attendance. They were, you know, they're like, this is off to a great start. How are you feeling about this weekend?
I'm super excited. This kind of an activity galvanizes me, because as you know, when you go out and do what I do 7 days a week, you go through the ups and downs. I mean, it's just the way humanity is. But you come to an event like this, all the preparation, all the hard work's been done by the staff, and then you see 600 exhibitors, I get to sit down and talk to you, I get to fight my way through the crowd to get here to sit to talk to you.
Right.
I think the exhibitors are going to be pleased, and really that's the barometer. When I can meet with you and I can talk to, whether it's all the big brand gun companies, and they tell me Monday that they had a good turnout and good showing, that's what I'm interested in. Right now I'm hearing great things.
Well, I got to tell you too, I mean, this voice is the Second Amendment. You know, 2004 was my first NRA annual meeting. They're on the big stage in Pittsburgh. And for the longest time, you know, NRA News was kind of the only media outlet in the room. This is really cool to walk down this media row. You've seen podcasters from all over the country who are here. In fact, you know, having to share booth space because there are so many people who want to be a part of this and want to be broadcasting or streaming or recording videos from the NRA annual meeting. And I got to say, the reception has been great. I mean, I've had a lot of folks just come up to me, say, you know, thanks for Cam and Company, thanks for what you're doing. So it's been really nice to be able to connect with my audience. I know that the other folks who are here out on Media Row as part of the Voice Over the Second Amendment feel the same way. So, you know, Mark Keefe, I got to give all the credit in the world for putting that together. Amanda Suffacool, I think, was involved in that as well. But, you know, you talk about those NRA staff, right? The NRA board members, the volunteers, like, this really, to put this together, it's a team effort. It really is. And it's a major accomplishment.
Well, having you here is big for us. Your voice, and you being an NRA TV guy and having your show with NRA all those years, I remember when you had five times this space and all lit up and boom, microphones. I mean, so we got to get back to that. I mean, this is the NRA. There's no reason for us to kind of just plink around here. You know, we're the big guys. And so having you here and having some of the other bloggers here is critical. It's critical. Everybody, you know, coming to you live from Atlanta. That's
right.
What I want.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that can't be here, so they're living vicariously through us.
Right. And next year is going to be Houston, right?
That's right?
So, you know, those folks who couldn't make it to the East Coast, well, now you got Central Time Zone coming up in 2026. And this is my first annual meeting since Houston in 2022. I had to miss, you know, because of my wife's health the last couple of years. And so this is, you know, it kind of feels like a homecoming, Doug. I'll be really honest with you.
I'm glad you're here, Cam.
I'm glad I'm here, too. I mean, I really am. You know, being able to reconnect with, and I've always said this, like, coming to the NRA annual meetings, for me, it's like a family reunion. You know, you get to see folks who you haven't talked to in a year. There are always those regulars who I watched kids grow up, Doug. I watched, you know, introduced this little girl named Frassy. Her dad, Dave, worked for Glock. Met her when she was 4 years old, you know, and I've watched her grow up for the past 20 years. Like, those are the types of relationships and the friendships that you can make here at the annual meeting, and you carry those relationships with you throughout the year. It really helps build that Second Amendment community and that NRA family.
Yeah, and I felt that last night, what you were just describing. I think the mood was, wow, this is like the old days. And I was going to NRA shows for many, many years, going back to the early 90s. The first one was in New Orleans. But then I went into the car business for a number of years, and I didn't come back till 2014 in Indianapolis.
Okay.
The foundation dinner, we probably had 1,200 people there. And so now it's, let's go back to where we were, where it's a celebration of our shared values as conservative, law-abiding gun owners who understand that it's not a God, it should be God-given, but we have to fight for the right.
Yeah, it's God-given, but it's man-preserved, right?
Well said.
You know, and to that end, I mean, again, I don't want this to be just a softball interview, but I do have to commend you. I will commend the NRA board for addressing the elephant in the room, right? For saying, yeah, we absolutely need to rebuild your trust.
Right.
And, you know, during the members meeting this morning, when you were talking about, want to rebuild the relationship with the industry, want to rebuild the relationships with the donors, want to rebuild the relationship with the staff, and want to rebuild the relationship with the rank and file members, like, those four pillars, right, are what makes the NRA so valuable and so powerful. And to recognize that, yeah, damage has been done, but we're going to show you the fixes that are being made, right? So what would you tell somebody who is,
who's still skeptical, Doug. They okay, this is great. I'm glad to see that people are back. I'm glad to see that, you know, you had such a great NRA Foundation dinner. But I don't know, Doug. I just can't be sure that my money is going to be well spent if I donate to the NRA. What do you say to those folks?
Well, just on a personal level, the suit that I'm wearing here today, I bought it at the half-off sale at Nordstrom. I fly coach class.
Yeah.
I do have a fair share of death threats, but my security, for the most part, is I pay for it at my home for my family. You know, went to ADT and upgraded everything. But I'm not in it. And when I took this job, there were no financial preconditions for me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was, look, you need to marine up because this organization needs somebody who understands continuity, and we need you to do this right now. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do it.
I will.
And there's a great sacrifice involved.
Yeah, well, absolutely there is. And I will say, too, like one of the changes I noticed at the members' meeting today, so the NRA has a compliance officer now, right?
Correct.
And every NRA member who was at that meeting got the compliance officer's report.
Correct.
And you can go through and you can say, okay, here's what was spent on travel. Here was the...
I just fell down.
Here's the money that was spent on first-class tickets. And why money was spent on first-class tickets, right? So there was an NRA board member had a medical condition.
Right.
And so that required board approval, right? Approval from the upper brass. Okay, you get to fly first class because of your medical condition. There were, I think, three flights, right? There was two charter flights last year. All of this stuff is now laid out for members to see and for members to question, right?
Right.
You've got a whistleblower hotline, in essence. So there are all of these conditions that are being laid out that I think is designed to give that reassurance to members of, okay, there's a watchdog, right? There's a watchdog looking over things and making sure that, you know, you don't always have to buy 50% off, but making sure that, you know, you're not getting those $10 million suits, you're not, abusing the members' money.
Members and future members, and I encourage you to go to NRA.org and join NRA. Do it right now. But we're going to be extremely judicious and conservative with member funds. Because at this point in time, it's all about preserving freedom, and the dollars that we can save operating the association go to the fight. And,
yeah.
And that's what we want to do. We want to preserve Second Amendment rights. So that's the priority.
Right. Well, you talked again at the members' meeting about the money that was spent first quarter of last year on legal fees.
Yes.
15 some odd million dollars, right?
Yes.
Money is spent this first quarter in 2025. It was, I want to say, roughly
$685,000.
Okay. So, I mean, that's money that's saved that can now go into rebuilding the competitive shooting sports division, right? Hiring staff to flesh out some of these departments that have had to take a hit over the last couple of years.
We're hiring, and you're exactly right, Cam. The money's going into programs and services. The hires have been in competitive shooting. They've been in community relations, which will service our clubs and associations. Those are the two primary areas that have benefited from this reinvestment, from this rehiring that we're doing. So our 2025 budget, and we're going to be adding more people. If you go to NRA.org, you look at careers, there are jobs listed there.
That's good. That's
yeah.
A very good thing.
That's a good thing.
Also the partnerships, and I spoke with John Comerford about this yesterday. I think it's fantastic to see the NRA partnering with groups like Second Amendment Foundation, Firearms Policy Coalition, not just the state-level organizations. You know, NRA has 50 of them, I believe, right? But to see these other two organizations, to see this coalition building on lawsuits and litigation, I think that I just got to say, you know, just from an outsider perspective, I think it's fantastic to see that cooperation.
We are coordinating. We are working with them. I mean, one of the things that we learned over this last 90 days, 100 days with President Trump is through USAID, they were circumventing taxpayer dollars and sending those dollars to anti-Second Amendment groups to fight against us. We're fighting on our own. I mean, we're operating due to the generosity of our membership.
Right.
Right? So this is not, it's not right. And shout out to President Trump and his administration for stopping it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and, you know, all of the positives that we've seen. you know, I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I said, you know, just the fact that the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice is investigating Second Amendment violations for the first time in the DOJ's history, we're seeing the Second Amendment treated as the civil right that it is. That's historic, right? And granted, this is early on in the administration. I think, you know, a lot of these moves are preliminary, but it seems like they're making a lot of the right preliminary steps here.
That's right. And I think you saw it today in the President Trump video that he was so generous to put together on his schedule. But he made it clear our rights will not be infringed.
Absolutely.
He's a huge advocate, huge supporter of NRA and all law-abiding gun owners.
So what are your goals? You've been at this for almost a year now.
Yes.
What are your goals over the next 12 months?
Well, let me put it this way. When I got into this job, you know, to make an analogy, a medical analogy, it was like having a patient in intensive care. So I want to stabilize the organization. And so you're seeing this hiring that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really tangible sign that things are getting back to where they should be, because we've been operating with 20% less staff than we used to have. So what does that mean? That means our programs and services suffer.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to bring fresh blood. I want to bring some fresh troops back into the organization. And I want the organization to be responsive to the members. So what does that mean? That means when there are issues, reach out to us, communicate what those issues are, and then let us get back to you and fix it, right? Right now, up until now, we've just been understaffed.
Yeah.
And part of the big decision to not sell the building in Fairfax, Virginia, and move anywhere else was to stabilize the staff. And what I mean by that is, if you live close to the headquarters and you're married and you have kids in school and you grew up in the area and your mom and dad live close by and your brothers and sisters live close by, and you've been told we're moving, right? That's
right.
Very destabilizing.
Yeah.
So then
you don't know, right?
The fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
So now we've made the decision, we're not moving, we're investing in that property, and we're going to be there for the foreseeable future.
That is good to hear. That is good to hear. Doug, listen, I know you are super busy this weekend. I appreciate you carving a few minutes out to sit down with me. You've always been gracious with your time. Whenever I ask, you know, can we get Doug on the show, you make it happen. So thank you for that. I look forward to having you back on again very soon. We've done it via Zoom. We've done it in Atlanta. Maybe next time I'll bring the gear up to Fairfax and we can do something at the NRA headquarters.
You're invited. Come
All right.
Up and see us.
Hey, Doug, thanks
Surprise
so much.
Me anytime.
Doug Hamlin, Executive Vice President and CEO of the National Rifle Association. Join us from the 2025 annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia.
My thanks again to Doug for sitting down at what was a very busy weekend for him. You heard from John Comerford, NRA ILA Executive Director. I think we uploaded that conversation on Friday. If you've not had a chance to check that out, I would encourage you to do so. Josh Savani, who is the head of general operations, had the chance to sit down with him as well. Cole McCullough, the director of competitive shooting. JP Carter with the NRA's Office of Advancement. Great conversations all, and you will hear those again in the days to come, as well as some of the other folks who were there on the ground at the annual meetings in Atlanta. Right now, though, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a situation, not a particular incident, but a situation in LA County. Los Angeles Daily News reporting thousands of people on probation are unsupervised as LA County redirects officers to Los Padrinos. That is the juvenile detention facility that has come under a lot of fire for lack of staff, for the conditions there. As the LA Daily News reports, thousands of probationers in Los Angeles County have lacked supervision since the probation department redeployed most of its field officers, supervisors, and directors to the Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall after 40% of the facility staff called out on Easter Sunday. Multiple sources in the department who spoke of the condition of anonymity out of fear of retaliation told the Southern California News Group that some area offices now only have one or two sworn officers on duty at a time. The largest office in the system, located in South Los Angeles, handles about 1,600 probationers and has two officers, meaning that they are each now responsible for 800 individuals on probation. Now, the standard is about 30 to 35 cases per probation officer. So this is abysmal. I mean, this isn't just a Herculean task for these probation officers. This is a Sisyphean task. There's no way to accomplish their job of supervising these individuals. One source told the LA Daily News or the Southern California News Group, you walk through any area office, it's desolate. They're all gone. The American Probation and Parole Association recommends a case to staff ratio of 20 to 200 per officer, depending on the risk score of the clients involved. Officers overseeing the highest risk probationers are recommended to have the lowest amount of cases. 200 still seems awfully high to me. But even if you take that high number, we're talking about four times the recommended upper limit caseload for these probation officers in LA County. LA County Supervisor Karen Catherine Barger calling on the probation department to, quote, implement an immediate realistic plan that both triages the crisis at Los Padrinos and sets us back on track to stabilize the entire system. She said the decision to direct resources to the Los Padrinos facility reflects the urgency of that facility situation, but, quote, it must not come at the expense of broader community safety and oversight. Well, I mean, again, this is a matter of priorities, and it's a matter of budgets. And, you know, LA County has a huge budget, but we have heard time and time again, I mean, this is the LA sheriff, right? Says, well, the reason why we have these concealed carry delays, budgetary issues. Probation office, the reason why we have a shortfall in staff, budgetary issues. Reason why the conditions at this juvenile facility, so deplorable, budgetary issues. So it does beg the question, what the heck is the County of Los Angeles spending its money on instead of, A, ensuring that people can exercise their right to bear arms in a timely manner, B, that individuals who are supposed to be under the supervision of LA County so they don't reoffend again are actually being supervised, and C, having staff at a juvenile facility who will actually do their jobs, maintain a safe environment so that juveniles who need to be behind bars can be kept behind bars. Because right now the county is failing in all three of those areas. And I honestly don't see any quick improvement in either of those areas of concern. Any of those areas of concern, I should say. On to today's armed citizen story from Indiana, where the Henry County Sheriff says a homeowner shot an intruder in the face. As the intruder was making his way inside, the intruder did survive, as a matter of fact. This was early Friday morning. According to the Henry County Sheriff's Department, at last report, the intruder listed as critical but stable. It was just before 2 o'clock Friday morning. Deputies were called to a home after the homeowner called 911, saying that a suspicious male was banging on his windows and doors and trying to gain entry. According to the Henry County Sheriff, the suspect allegedly broke a window and then attempted to climb into the residence, but was met with the barrel of a gun. Sheriff's Department said the homeowner shot the intruder in the face. The suspect was found lying on the porch when deputies arrived on scene. The homeowner fully cooperating with the investigation, according to the Sheriff's Department. They identified the intruder as a man named Preston Kendall. Don't believe that there's any connection between Kendall and the homeowner. So we don't know the motivation here. This was just... I mean, to me, if you're going to try to break into a home in the middle of the night to steal stuff, you don't bang on doors and windows to alert the homeowner inside, right? That seems a little odd. But again, we don't know all of the circumstances. The investigation does continue. But at this point, I would say it's pretty clear that the homeowner had a reasonable belief that his life and the lives of others inside that home were in danger when this man who was banging on the doors and windows then decided to break a window to come inside. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A Texas man who saved two children from a sinking car in the San Jacinto River. Unfortunately, the mother of those two children and a one-year-old child did pass away in this incident. Police aren't sure what happened that caused that car to go into the river. They believe the woman may have had a medical emergency of some kind. But if there is a silver lining to this tragedy, it is that two of these children were saved because of the quick thinking and the fast actions of Agustin Garcia Alvarez. This was Friday afternoon, about 4:45. A Kia driven by a woman named Crystal Nespu and her three young children inside, ages 1, 5, and 7, went off the road into the San Jacinto River in Harris County. Authorities say the car appeared to stop for about a minute at a gravel area before then accelerated into the water. Alvarez said that he pulled over when he saw small hands waving, and he heard cries for help. He said, "I pulled over under the shoulder and I noticed a little hand sticking out and someone was yelling, 'Help, help.'" So he dove into the river, was able to secure a rope to the back of his truck, broke the back window of the Kia with a baseball bat. At this point, there were other witnesses who were helping out as well. Alvarez said, "I saw a little boy's head and I pulled him up, and right behind him was a girl. But by then the car was going straight down." He said, "I got both kids out. I was exhausted. I already swam about 50 feet out." And he said, "You know, I'm very sad because two lives stayed inside that car and I couldn't get them out." He said, "It hurts to face my human limits. Yet I do feel some peace knowing that I rescued two." And he said, "I risked my own life because Jehovah God has taught me to love my neighbor. As long as I have life, health, and strength, that's what I want to keep doing." I cannot imagine being in that situation, knowing that you've helped save lives, knowing that lives were lost, and feeling that burden of, could I do more? I would say that to Mr. Alvarez, what you did was actually extraordinary. And I know that you would have loved to have saved everybody in that car. But the fact that two people are here on this earth today, they will hopefully get to live long, productive, happy lives because of your actions. Again, that is not just significant, but that is extraordinary. And so thank you for your very, very good deed. Now, that is all we've got for you here on this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. It truly does mean so much to me, particularly when I get a chance to, again, catch up with folks or meet people for the very first time who say, you know, I listen every day while I'm cooking dinner. I had a guy come up to me who said I kept him company in the coal mines out in Wyoming. And again, it's humbling. It is gratifying. And I just, again, want to express my appreciation for you watching and listening each and every day. I know that I am probably not your only source for Second Amendment news and information, but I am glad that I am a source for your Second Amendment news and information. And we will be back tomorrow with more coverage of the NRA annual meetings. We, of course, will continue to keep you up to date on everything else that's going on around the country. There is more news to report than just outside of Atlanta. In fact, we've got an update for you on the Supreme Court at bearingarms.com. I would encourage you to check it out. Once again, silence on Snope and Ocean State Tactical, and the Supreme Court turned away another case that, well, I really wish they would have accepted. We've got all the details for you there and more. So be sure to check out the website. And if you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Not only will you be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, but you will get all kinds of great benefits at every tier of support, including an ad-free experience, ability to contact me directly and other town hall writers. Some great stuff there. So thank you again. We'll see you back here for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.